Welcome to The Mildly Interesting with Oliver Wilson, the official bedtime podcast of former insomniacs. Tomorrow is Wednesday, November 10th, Sesame Street Day. Sesame Street Day was first established in 2009 to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the show's original broadcast. It is broadcast in more than 140 countries in at least 70 languages and has over 30 different international versions that are adapted to local cultures and issues. The show has released more than 4,500 episodes that cover all kinds of subjects that are appropriate for kids but also entertaining for adults. Everyone loves Sesame Street, but have you ever wondered about its history? Well, I have. And I think you might just find it mildly interesting. Subscribe to The Mildly Interesting on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are available. We'll be right back. Sesame Street is an American educational children's television series that combines live action, sketch comedy, animation, and puppetry. It was produced by Sesame Workshop, known as the Children's Television Workshop, CTW, until June 2000, and was created by Joan Garnes Cooney and Lloyd Morissette. The program is known for its images communicated through the use of Jim Henson's Muppets and includes short films with humor and cultural references. The series premiered on November 10, 1969, to positive reviews, some controversy, and high viewership. It has aired on the U.S.'s national public television provider PBS since its debut, with its first run moving to premium channel HBO on January 16, 2016, then its sister streaming service HBO Max in 2020. The format of Sesame Street consists of a combination of commercial television production elements and techniques which have evolved to reflect the changes in American culture and the audience's viewing habits. With the creation of Sesame Street, producers and writers of a children's television show used, for the first time, educational goals and a curriculum to shape its content. It was also the first time a show's educational effects were formally studied. The show, therefore, has undergone significant changes in its history as adjustments to the format and content have been made to reflect change sources to the curriculum. Shortly after creating Sesame Street, its producers developed what came to be called the CTW model, after the production company's previous name, a system of television show planning, production, and evaluation based on collaborations between producers, writers, educators, and researchers. The show was initially funded by government and private foundations but has become somewhat self-supporting due to revenues from licensing arrangements, international sales, and other media. By 2006, there were independently produced versions, or co-productions, of Sesame Street broadcast in 20 countries. In 2001, there were over 120 million viewers of various international versions of Sesame Street, and by the show's 40th anniversary in 2009, it was broadcast in more than 140 countries. Sesame Street was by then the 15th highest rated children's television show in the United States. A 1996 survey found that 95% of all American preschoolers had watched the show by the time they were 3 years old. In 2018, it was estimated that 86 million Americans had watched the series as children. As of 2018, Sesame Street has won 189 Emmy Awards and 11 Grammy Awards, more than any other children's show. Sesame Street was conceived in 1966 during discussions between television producer Joan Garnes Cooney and Carnegie Foundation Vice President Lloyd Morissette. Their goal was to create a children's television show that would master the addictive qualities of television and do something good with them, such as helping young children prepare for school. After 2 years of research, the newly formed Children's Television Workshop, CTW, received a combined grant of $8 million, $56 million in 2020 dollars, from the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and the U.S. federal government to create and produce a new children's television show. The program premiered on public television stations on November 10, 1969. It was the first preschool educational television program to base its contents and production values on laboratory and formative research. Initial responses to the show included adulatory reviews, some controversy, and high ratings. By its 50th anniversary in 2019, over 150 versions of Sesame Street were produced in 70 languages. As of 2006, 20 international versions had been produced. According to writer Michael Davis, by the mid-1970s, Sesame Street, the show had become an American institution. The cast and crew expanded during this time, emphasizing the hiring of women crew members and the addition of minorities to the cast. The show's success continued into the 1980s. In 1981, when the federal government withdrew its funding, CTW turned to, and expanded, other revenue sources, including its magazine division, book royalties, product licensing, and foreign broadcast income. Sesame Street's curriculum has expanded to include more effective topics such as relationships, ethics, and emotions. Many of the show's storylines were taken from the experiences of its writing staff, cast, and crew, most notably, the 1982 death of Will Lee, who played Mr. Hooper, and the marriage of Luis and Maria, in 1988. By the end of 1990s, Sesame Street faced societal and economic challenges, including changes in young children's viewing habits, competition from other shows, the development of cable television, and a drop in ratings. After the turn of the 21st century, Sesame Street made significant structural changes. For example, starting in 2002, its format became more narrative-focused and included ongoing storylines. After its 30th anniversary in 1999, due to the popularity of the Muppet Elmo, the show also incorporated a popular segment known as Elmo's World. In 2009, the show was awarded the Outstanding Achievement Emmy for its 40 years on the air. In late 2015, in response to sweeping changes in the media business, and as part of a 5-year programming and development deal, premium television service HBO began airing first-run episodes of Sesame Street. Episodes became available on PBS stations and websites 9 months after they aired on HBO. The deal allowed Sesame Workshop to produce more episodes, about 35 new episodes per season, compared to the 18 episodes per season it aired previously, and provided the opportunity to create a spin-off series with the Sesame Street Muppets and a new educational series. As of the show's 50th anniversary in 2019, Sesame Street has produced over 4,500 episodes, 2 feature-length movies, Follow That Bird in 1985 and The Adventures of Elmo in Grouchland in 1999, 35 TV specials, 200 home videos, and 180 albums. Its YouTube channel has almost 5 million subscribers. It was announced in October 2019 that first-run episodes will move to HBO Max, beginning with its 51st season in 2020. From its first episode, Sesame Street has structured its format by using a strong visual style, fast-moving action, humor, and music, as well as animation and live-action short films. When Sesame Street premiered, most researchers believed that young children did not have long attention spans, therefore, the new show's producers were concerned that an hour-long show would not hold their audience's attention. At first, the show's street scenes, the action taking place on its set, consisted of character-driven interactions and were not written as ongoing stories. Instead, they consisted of individual, curriculum-based segments, which were interrupted by inserts consisting of puppet sketches, short films, and animations. This structure allowed the producers to use a mixture of styles and characters and to vary the show's pace. By season 20, research had shown that children could follow a story, and the street scenes, while still interspersed with other segments, became evolving storylines. Upon recommendations by child psychologists, the producers initially decided that the show's human actors and Muppets would not interact because they were concerned it would confuse young children. When the CTW tested the appeal of the new show, they found that although children paid attention to the shows during the Muppet segments, their interest was lost during the street segments. The producers requested that Henson and his team create Muppets such as Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch to interact with the human actors, and the street segments were reshot. Sesame Street's format remained intact until the 2000s, when the changing audience required that producers move to a more narrative format. In 1998, the famous Elmo's World, a 15-minute-long segment hosted by the Muppet Elmo, was created. Starting in 2014, during the show's 45th season, the producers introduced a half-hour program version. The new version, which initially complemented the full-hour series, was broadcast on weekday afternoons and streamed on the internet. In 2017, in response to the changing viewing habits of toddlers, the show's producers decreased the show's length from 1 hour to 30 minutes across all its broadcast platforms. The new version focused on fewer characters, reduced the pop culture references once included as winks for their parents, and focused on a single backbone topic. Author Malcolm Gladwell said that Sesame Street was built around a single, breakthrough insight, that if you can hold the attention of children, you can educate them. Gerald S. Lesser, the CTW's first advisory board chair, went even further, saying that the effective use of television as an educational tool needed to capture, focus, and sustain children's attention. Sesame Street was the first children's show to structure each episode and the segments within them, capture children's attention, and make, as Gladwell put it, small but critical adjustments to keep it. According to CTW researchers Rosemary Truglio and Shalom Fish, Sesame Street was one of the few children's television programs to utilize a detailed and comprehensive educational curriculum garnered from formative and summative research. The creators of Sesame Street and their researchers formulated both cognitive and effective goals for the show. Initially, they focused on cognitive goals while indirectly addressing effective goals, believing that doing so would increase children's self-esteem and feelings of competency. One of their primary goals was preparing young children for school, especially children from low-income families, using modeling, repetition, and humor to fulfill these goals. They changed the show's content to increase their viewers' attention and increase its appeal, and encouraged co-viewing to encourage older children and parents to watch the show by including more sophisticated humor, cultural references, and celebrity guest appearances. After Sesame Street's first season, its critics forced its producers and researchers to overtly address such effective goals as social competence, tolerance of diversity, and non-aggressive ways of resolving conflict. These issues were addressed through interpersonal disputes among its street characters. During the 1980s, the show incorporated the real-life experiences of the show's cast and crew, including the death of Will Lee, Mr. Hooper, and the pregnancy of Sonia Monzano, Maria, to address affective concerns. In later seasons, Sesame Street addressed real-life disasters such as the September 11th terrorist attacks and Hurricane Katrina. The show's goals for outreach were addressed through a series of programs that first focused on promotion and then, after the first season, on the development of educational materials used in preschool settings. Innovative programs were developed because their target audience, children and their families in low-income, inner-city homes, did not traditionally watch educational programs on television and because traditional promotion and advertising methods were not effective with these groups. Starting in 2006, the workshop expanded its outreach by creating a series of PBS specials and DVDs focusing on how military deployment affects the families of soldiers. The workshop's outreach efforts also focused on families of prisoners, health and wellness, and safety. In 2013, SW started Sesame Street in Communities, a branch of their outreach efforts, to help families dealing with complex issues. As a result of Cooney's initial proposal in 1968, the Carnegie Institute awarded her a $1 million grant to create a new children's television program and establish the CTW, renamed in June 2000 to Sesame Workshop, SW. Cooney and Morissette procured additional multi-million dollar grants from the U.S. federal government, the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations, CPB, and the Ford Foundation. Davis reported that Cooney and Morissette decided that if they did not procure total funding from the beginning, they would drop the idea of producing the show. As Lesser reported, funds gained from a combination of government agencies and private foundations protected them from the economic pressures experienced by commercial broadcast television networks but created challenges in procuring future funding. After Sesame Street's initial success, its producers began to think about its survival beyond its development and first season and decided to explore other funding sources. From the first season, they understood that the source of their funding, which they considered seed money, would need to be replaced. The 1970s were marked by conflicts between the CTW and the federal government. In 1978, the U.S. Department of Education refused to deliver a $2 million check until the last day of CTW's fiscal year. As a result, the CTW decided to depend upon licensing arrangements with toy companies and other manufacturers, publishing, and international sales for their funding. In 1998, the CTW accepted corporate sponsorship to raise funds for Sesame Street and other projects. For the first time, they allowed short advertisements by indoor playground manufacturer Discovery Zone, their first corporate sponsor, to air before and after each episode. Consumer advocate Ralph Nader, who had previously appeared on Sesame Street, called for a boycott of the show, saying that the CTW was exploiting impressionable children. In 2015, in response to funding challenges, it was announced that premium television service HBO would air first-run episodes of Sesame Street. Steve Youngwood, SW's chief operating officer, called the move one of the toughest decisions we ever made. According to the New York Times, the move drew an immediate backlash. Critics claimed that it favored privileged children over less advantaged children and their families, the show's original focus. They also criticized choosing to air first-run episodes on HBO, a network with adult dramas and comedies. Producer Joan Garnes Cooney has stated, "Without research, there would be no Sesame Street." In 1967, when Cooney and her team began to plan the show's development, combining research with television production was, as she put it, positively heretical. Shortly after creating Sesame Street, its producers began to develop what came to be called the CTW model, a system of planning, production, and evaluation that did not fully emerge until the end of the show's first season. According to Morrow, the CTW model consisted of four parts: the interaction of receptive television producers and child science experts, the creation of a specific and age-appropriate curriculum, research to shape the program directly, and independent measurement of viewers' learning. Cooney credited the show's high standard in research procedures to Harvard professors Gerald S. Lesser, who the CTW hired to design the show's educational objectives, and Edward L. Palmer, who was responsible for conducting the show's formative research and for bridging the gap between the show's producers and researchers. The CTW conducted research in two ways: in-house formative research that informed and improved production, and independent summative evaluations, conducted by the Educational Testing Service, ETS, during the show's first two seasons, which measured its educational effectiveness. Cooney stated, "From the beginning, we, the planners of the project, designed the show as an experimental research project with educational advisors, researchers, and television producers collaborating as equal partners." Cooney also described the collaboration as an arranged marriage. When we return, we'll dive into the many writers in Sesame Street's long history. Sesame Street has used many writers in its long history. As Peter Hellman wrote in his 1987 article in New York Magazine, "The show, of course, depends upon its writers, and it isn't easy to find adults who could identify the interest level of a preschooler." 15 writers a year worked on the show's scripts, but very few lasted longer than one season. Norman Stiles, a head writer in 1987, reported that most writers would burn out after writing about a dozen scripts. According to Gickow, Sesame Street went against the convention of hiring teachers to write for the show, as most educational television programs did at the time. Instead, Cooney and the producers felt that it would be easier to teach writers how to interpret curriculum than teach educators how to write comedy. As Stone stated, "Writing for children is not so easy." Longtime writer Tony Geiss agreed, stating in 2009, "It's not an easy show to write. You have to know the characters and the format and how to teach and be funny at the same time, which is a big, ambidextrous stunt." The show's research team developed an annotated document, or writer's notebook, which served as a bridge between the show's curriculum goals and script development. The notebook was a compilation of programming ideas designed to teach specific curriculum points, provided extended definitions of curriculum goals, and assisted the writers and producers translate the goals into televised material. Suggestions in the notebook were free of references to specific characters and contexts on the show to be implemented as openly and flexibly as possible. In a series of meetings with the writers, the research team also developed a curriculum sheet, that described the show's goals and priorities for each season. After receiving the curriculum focus and goals for the season, the writers met to discuss ideas and story arcs for the characters, and an assignment sheet was created that suggested how much time was allotted for each goal and topic. When a script was completed, the show's research team analyzed it to ensure that the goals were met. Then each production department met to determine what each episode needed in terms of costumes, lights, and sets. The writers were present during the show's taping, which for the first 24 years of the show took place in Manhattan, and after 1992, at the Kaufman Astoria Studios in Queens to make last-minute revisions when necessary. Early in their history, Sesame Street and the CW began to look for alternative funding sources and began creating products and writing licensing agreements. They became, as Cooley put it, a multiple media institution. In 1970, the CW created a non-broadcast division responsible for creating and publishing books and Sesame Street magazine. By 2019, the Sesame Workshop had published over 6,500 book titles. The workshop decided from the start that all materials their licensing program created would underscore and amplify the show's curriculum. In 2004, over 68% of Sesame Street's revenue came from licenses and products such as toys and clothing. By 2008, the Sesame Street Muppets accounted for between $15 million and $17 million per year in licensing and merchandising fees, split between the Sesame Workshop and the Jim Henson Company. By 2019, the Sesame Workshop had over 500 licensing agreements, and had produced over 200 hours of home video. There have been two theatrically released Sesame Street movies, Follow That Bird, released in 1985, and Elmo in Grouch Land, released in 1999. In early 2019, it was announced that a third film, a musical co-starring Anne Hathaway and written and directed by Jonathan Crissel, would be produced. In November 2019, Sesame Street announced a family-friendly augmented reality application produced by Wayo in partnership with Sesame Workshop in honor of the show's 50th anniversary. Jim Henson, the creator of the Muppets, owned the trademarks to those characters and was reluctant to market them at first. He agreed when the CW promised that the profits from toys, books, computer games, and other products would be used exclusively to fund the CW and its outreach efforts. Even though Cooley and the CW had minimal experience with marketing, they demanded complete control over all products and product decisions. Any product line associated with the show had to be educational and inexpensive and could not be advertised during the show's airings. As Davis reported, Cooney stressed restraint, prudence, and caution in their marketing and licensing efforts. Director John Stone, talking about the music of Sesame Street, said, "There was no other sound like it on television. For the first time on children's television, its songs fulfilled a specific purpose and supported its curriculum. To attract the best composers and lyricists, the CW allowed songwriters like Joe Raposo, Sesame Street's first musical director, to retain the rights to the songs they wrote, which earned them lucrative profits and helped the show sustain public interest." By 2019, 180 albums of Sesame Street music were produced, and its songwriters had received 11 Grammys. In late 2018, the SW announced a multi-year agreement with Warner Music Group to relaunch Sesame Street Records in the US and Canada. For the first time in 20 years, an extensive catalog of Sesame Street recordings was made available to the public in various formats, including CD and vinyl compilations, digital streaming, and downloads. Sesame Street used animations and short films commissioned from outside studios, interspersed throughout each episode, to help teach their viewers basic concepts like numbers and letters. Jim Henson was one of the many producers to create short films for the show. Shortly after Sesame Street debuted in the United States, the CTW was approached independently by producers from several countries to produce versions of the show at home. These versions came to be called co-productions. By 2001, there were over 120 million viewers of all international versions of Sesame Street, and in 2006, there were 20 co-productions around the world. By its 50th anniversary in 2019, 190 million children viewed over 160 versions of Sesame Street in 70 languages. In 2005, Doreen Carvajal of the New York Times reported that income from the co-productions and international licensing accounted for $96 million. Shortly after the CTW was created in 1968, Joan Garnes Cooney was named its first executive director. She was one of the first female executives in American television. Her appointment was called one of the most important television developments of the decade. She assembled a team of producers, all of whom had previously worked on Captain Kangaroo. John Stone was responsible for writing, casting, and format, Dave Connell took over animation, and Sam Gibbon served as the show's chief liaison between the production staff and the research team. Cameraman Frankie Biondo worked on Sesame Street from its first episode. Jim Henson and the Muppets' involvement in Sesame Street began when he and Cooney met at one of the curriculum planning seminars in Boston. Author Christopher Finch reported that Stone, who had worked with Henson previously, felt that if they could not bring him on board, they should make do without puppets. Henson was initially reluctant, but he agreed to join Sesame Street to meet his own social goals. He also agreed to waive his performance fee for full ownership of the Sesame Street Muppets and to split any revenue they generated with the CTW. As Morrow stated, Henson's puppets were a crucial part of the show's popularity, and it brought Henson national attention. Davis reported that Henson was able to take arcane academic goals and translate them to effective and pleasurable viewing. In early research, the Muppet segments of the show scored high, and more Muppets were added during the first few seasons. Morrow reported that the Muppets were effective teaching tools because children quickly recognized them, were stereotypical and predictable, and appealed to adults and older siblings. Although the producers decided against depending upon a single host for Sesame Street, instead of casting a group of ethnically diverse actors, they realized that a children's television program needed to have, as Lessa put it, a variety of distinctive and reliable personalities, both human and Muppet. John Stone, whose goal was to cast white actors in the minority, was responsible for hiring the first cast. He did not audition actors until spring 1969, a few weeks before the five test shows were filmed. Stone videotaped the auditions, and Ed Palmer took them out into the field to test children's reactions. The actors who received the most enthusiastic thumbs up were cast. For example, Loretta Long was chosen to play Susan when the children who saw her audition stood up and sang along with her rendition of "I'm a Little Teapot." Stone stated that casting was the only aspect of the show that was just completely haphazard. Most cast and crew found jobs on Sesame Street through personal relationships with Stone and the other producers. According to puppeteer Marty Robinson in 2019, longevity was common among the show's cast and crew. According to the CTW's research, children preferred watching and listening to other children more than puppets and adults, so they included children in many scenes. Dave Connell insisted that no child actors be used, so these children were non-professionals, unscripted, and spontaneous. Many of their reactions were unpredictable and difficult to control, but the adult cast learned to handle the children's spontaneity flexibly, even when it resulted in departures from the planned script or lesson. CTW research also revealed that the children's hesitations and on-air mistakes served as models for viewers. According to Morrow, the show had a fresh quality, especially in its early years. When Sesame Street premiered on November 10, 1969, it aired on only 67.6% of American televisions, but it earned a 3.3 Nielsen rating, totaling 1.9 million households. By the show's 10th anniversary in 1979, 9 million American children under 6 were watching Sesame Street daily. According to a 1993 survey conducted by the U.S. Department of Education, out of the show's 6.6 million viewers, 2.4 million kindergartners regularly watched it. 77% of preschoolers watched it once a week, and 86% of kindergartners and first and second grade students had watched it once a week before starting school. The show reached most young children in almost all demographic groups. The show's ratings significantly decreased in the early 1990s due to changes in children's viewing habits and the television marketplace. The producers responded by making large-scale structural changes to the show. By 2006, Sesame Street had become the most widely viewed children's television show in the world, with 20 international independent versions and broadcasts in over 120 countries. A 1996 survey found that 95% of all American preschoolers had watched the show by the time they were 3 years old. In 2008, it was estimated that 77 million Americans had watched the series as children. By the show's 40th anniversary in 2009, it was ranked the 15th most popular children's show on television, and by its 50th anniversary in 2019, the show had 100% brand awareness globally. In 2018, the show was the second highest rated program on PBS Kids. In 2021, however, the Sesame Street documentary 50 Years of Sunny Days, which was broadcast nationally on ABC, didn't fare well in the ratings, scoring only approximately 2.3 million viewers. As of 2001, there were over 1,000 research studies regarding Sesame Street's efficacy, impact, and effect on American culture. The CTW solicited the Educational Testing Service, ETS, to conduct summative research on the show. ETS's two landmark summative evaluations, conducted in 1970 and 1971, demonstrated that the show had a significant educational impact on its viewers. These studies have been cited in other studies of the effects of television on young children. Additional studies conducted throughout Sesame Street's history demonstrated that the show continued to positively affect its young viewers. Lesser believed that Sesame Street research may have conferred a new respectability upon the studies of the effects of visual media upon children. He also believed that the show had the same effect on the prestige of producing shows for children in the television industry. In his book Sesame Street and the Reform of Children's Television, historian Robert Morrow chronicled the show's influence on children's television, and the television industry reported that many critics of commercial television saw Sesame Street as a straightforward illustration for reform. A writer for Variety, Les Brown, saw a hope for a more substantial future for television in Sesame Street. Mora reported that the networks responded by creating more high-quality television programs, but that many critics saw them as appeasement gestures. According to Mora, despite the CTW model's effectiveness in creating a popular show, commercial television made only a limited effort to emulate CTW's methods and did not use a curriculum, or evaluate what children learned from them. By the mid-1970s, commercial television had abandoned its experiments with creating better children's programming. Other critics hoped that Sesame Street, with its depiction of a functioning, multicultural community, would nurture racial tolerance in its young viewers. It was not until the mid-1990s that another children's television educational program, Blue's Clues, used the CTW's methods to create and modify their content. The creators of Blue's Clues were influenced by Sesame Street but wanted to use research conducted in the 30 years since its debut. Angela Santomero, one of its producers, said, "We wanted to learn from Sesame Street and take it one step further." Critic Richard Roper said that perhaps one of the most vital indicators of the influence of Sesame Street has been the enduring rumors and urban legends surrounding the show and its characters, mainly speculation concerning the sexuality of Bert and Ernie. Sesame Street was praised for its debut in 1969. Newsday reported that several newspapers and magazines had written glowing reports about the CTW and Cooney. The press overwhelmingly praised the new show, several popular magazines and niche magazines lauded it. In 1970, Sesame Street won 20 awards, including a Peabody Award, 3 Emmys, an award from the Public Relations Society of America, a Clio, and a Prix Jeunesse. By 1995, the show had won 2 Peabody Awards and 4 Parents' Choice Awards. In addition, it was the subject of retrospectives at the Smithsonian Institution and the Museum of Modern Art. Sesame Street was not without its detractors, however. The State Commission in Mississippi, where Henson was from, operated the state's PBS member station. In May 1970, it voted to not air Sesame Street because of its highly, racially, integrated cast of children, which the commission members felt Mississippi was not yet ready for. According to Children and Television, Lesser's account of Sesame Street's development and early years, there was little criticism of the show in the months following its premiere, but it increased at the end of its first season and beginning of the second season. Historian Robert W. Morrow speculated that much of the early criticism, which he called surprisingly intense, stemmed from cultural and historical reasons regarding, as he put it, the place of children in American society and the controversies about television's effects on them. According to Morrow, the most important studies finding adverse effects of Sesame Street were conducted by educator Herbert A. Sprigle and psychologist Thomas D. Cook during its first 2 seasons. Social scientist and Head Start founder Yuri Bronfenbrenner criticized the show for being too wholesome. Psychologist Leon Eisenberg saw Sesame Street's urban setting as superficial and having little to do with the problems confronted by the inner-city child. Head Start director Edward Ziegler was probably Sesame Street's most vocal critic in the show's early years. Despite their commitment to multiculturalism, the CTW experienced conflicts with the leadership of minority groups, especially Latino groups and feminists, who objected to Sesame Street's depiction of Latinos and women. The CTW took steps to address their objections. By 1971, the CTW hired Hispanic actors, production staff, and researchers, and by the mid-1970s, Mora reported that the show included Chicano and Puerto Rican cast members, films about Mexican holidays and foods, and cartoons that taught Spanish words. As the New York Times has stated, creating strong female characters that make kids laugh, but not as female stereotypes has been a challenge for the producers of Sesame Street. According to Morrow, change regarding how women and girls were depicted on Sesame Street occurred slowly. More female Muppet performers like Camille Bonora, Fran Brill, Pam Urcero, Carmen Osbar, Stephanie DeBruzzo, Jennifer Barnhart, and Leslie Carrara Rudolph were hired and trained. Stronger female characters like Rosita and Abby Kadabi were created. In 2002, Sesame Street was ranked number 27 on TV Guide's 50 Greatest TV Shows of All Time. Sesame Workshop won a Peabody Award in 2009 for its website, sesamestreet.org, and the show was given Peabody's Institutional Award in 2019 for 50 years of educating and entertaining children globally. In 2013, TV Guide ranked the show number 30 on its list of the 60 best TV series.